podcasts. Since the discovery of their existence, they have been regarded with fear, suspicion, and often hatred. But now there's harmless phosphorescence! Hello, everyone. This is Thoreau Smiley, and I went to Woodstock with my mother. Who's joining me today?
I'm Josh Cece, and something's happening in the food court.
I'm Brian Lesh, and estoy tirando la basura? Garbage?
I'm Alaric Weber, but at the circus, I was known as the incredible Alaric Weber.
The incredible.
And this is Harmless Phosphorescence, the podcast where we watch every theatrically released full-length live-action superhero movie ever made. We gather some research into the production and the source material, then we tell you all about it. And boy, oh boy, is this show brought to you by our patrons. Do you want to have some extra podcasts to listen to every week and month? Well, for just a buck a month, you too can listen to our monthly movie. That's $1 a month to listen to one extra podcast per month. Plus, we got a bunch of other ones at the $5 level. So head on over to patreon.com/harmlessentertainment and join us. We'd love to have you. This week, though, we are watching X2, X-Men United.
Doesn't it ever wake you in the middle of the night? The feeling that someday they will pass that foolish law and come for you and your children. Take you all away.
It does indeed.
I feel a great swell of pity for the poor soul who comes to that school looking for trouble. What's happened to you?
Don't you remember?
You should have killed me when you had the chance!
I'm not gonna kill him, Bobby!
No! No!
Welcome, Professor.
You haven't told him about his past.
Who is he?
I can't remember.
Sometimes anger can help you survive.
The war has begun.
Yes, X2, X-Men United, the sequel to X1, X-Men Ununited.
No, X-Men 1, we're getting there.
Yeah. Yeah, X1, the secret military operation. This was released. This was released May 2nd, 2003. It has a running time of 133 minutes. It had a budget of $125 million, and it took in $407 million in domestic box office. Yes, I said the word box office, which means it's time to play the box office top 10 game.
I'm ready.
This is the game where every week the boys try to guess where it opened and what the top 10 movies were based on the boxofficemojo.com description. Guys, do you really want to guess again? This is we're kind of reaching the era of
Box office is the number one.
So I think we can skip that one. We all agree it's number one.
Number one. Yep.
Yeah. I haven't even looked at it yet. Yep, number one. Okay, so so we'll all jump into the top 10 game, wherein the boys here will guess what the movie is based on the Box Office Mojo description. Number 10, publicist Stuart Shepard finds himself trapped in a phone booth pinned down by an extortionist sniper rifle. Unable to leave or receive outside help, Stewart's negotiation with the caller leads to a jaw-dropping climax.
This is Porta Potty, right? Starring Jared Leto? Yes. I remember this movie.
Porta Potty. What year is this?
2003.
So isn't it just called Phone Booth?
It is just called Phone Booth. That description, though. was
I know.
So lengthy.
Makes it sound way more interesting than it was.
Yeah.
I don't know how they pulled off a phone booth movie in 2003.
Right. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, you couldn't make a movie called Phone Booth in 2020.
Like, yeah.
Absolutely not, yeah.
Like, even rotary by phone.
Even by 2003, they weren't booths anymore. They were the half, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and they were all...
It was just half a booth.
They were already starting to take out some. Like, they were already fewer than there used to be at that point.
So they're like, look, we got to make this script, like, yesterday.
Yeah, in 2020, it would be, like, outside a gas station. It's the only place I've seen
it. Yeah. Cell phone.
Yeah, no, in 2020, it would just be called cell phone.
And, right.
Yeah.
It's another one of those movies that technology has made.
In 2020 would be called, couldn't this just be a text?
Right. Yeah.
Coming in at number 9, the daughter of Orthodox Sikh rebels. Oh, okay. The daughter of Orthodox Sikhs rebels against her parents' traditionalism.
I think I have a guess. Bend it like Beckham?
Yes, very good.
Oh, wow.
Very good. I've never actually seen that one. I've heard it was good. I never actually saw it.
It's really fun.
It is good.
Yeah. Coming in at number 8. Jesus, I do not remember this. This is the story of a dysfunctional New York family and their attempts to reconcile. If it wasn't New York, I would have... Yeah, it would have just been Arrested Development.
That's a good guess, Brian.
Right, it is not Tenenbaums, but that was a good guess.
Technically not New York. But.
Did the family learn something about themselves?
Does one of them die?
Here, let me see. I will...
Presumably all.
Name cast members.
New York family.
This starred... Director, director. Cast, there we go. okay. So yeah, you can't go directly to IMDb from Box Office Mojo. It tries to take you to IMDb Pro, which just wants you to log in.
Worth it. That's give them all your money, bro. Yeah.
What was
so,
it?
All right. So it was directed by Fred Schepisi. It runs in the family.
It runs in the family.
I have no idea what that is. God.
It's a riddle. So they're talking about their dog.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, it's so much faster. Just Google that. Yeah, it runs in the family. Oh, starring Kirk Douglas, Cameron Douglas, Michael Douglas, Diana Douglas, the entire Douglas clan.
All of them.
And Rory Culkin. But not Kieran or McCauley.
Yeah, no other Culkin.
And Bernadette Peters, wow.
They were afraid that a gang war would... break out.
The Culkins versus Culkins the Douglas.
I'm Kirk Douglas. I'm Kirk Douglas.
Number 7. Jake Vig is a consummate grifter about to pull his biggest con yet. One set to avenge his friend's murder, but his last scam backfired, leaving him indebted to a mob boss and his enforcer.
The
Swordfish?
No, but that was that era. This stars Dustin Hoffman, Rachel Wise, Ed Burns, Andy Garcia, Paul Giamatti, and Louise Guzman.
The Louise Guzman.
The Louise Guzman. And Frankie G. It's called Confidence. I don't remember this movie.
No.
Coming in at number 6, a senator arranges for his son to be kidnapped by a couple of black actors pretending to be murderers to try and shock him out of his plans to become a rapper.
Malibu's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
Wow, that description. I've never seen that movie.
Jamie Kennedy.
That's not a movie that could be made now.
No. Nope.
No. Number 5. A wrongfully convicted boy is sent to a brutal desert detention camp where he joins the job of digging holes for some mysterious reason.
Holes. This is like a phone booth again. Yeah. Right. Holes.
Holes. Holes. Shia LaBeouf.
A great movie.
Coming in at number 4. Dave Busnick is a businessman who is wrongly sentenced to an anger management program where he meets an aggressive instructor.
Phone booth.
Yes. Did you say bone booth, which was the porn version of phone booth?
Those existed, bone booth.
Yeah, they were expensive, I'm sure. At least I hope.
A few tokens.
Yeah. That's always a bag of tokens. So they're $20 tokens.
I don't know what they go for now. I could have told you when I was 19. But yeah, whatever.
That was anger management. Nicholson and Sandler. Coming in at number 3. Stranded at a desolate Nevada motel during a nasty rainstorm, 10 strangers become acquainted with each other when they realize that they're being killed off one by one.
Identity.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that movie. Vaguely. This was the era of like the terrible, the post Scream horror era was really bad for a while there.
They were trying to make thrillers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Coming in at number 2, opening this week up against X2. There's no way to say this without giving away the movie.
E.T. lands.
Close. Lizzie McGuire has graduated from middle school and takes a trip to Rome, Italy. They specify Rome, Italy with her class rather than Rome, Nevada.
Rome, Georgia.
Rome, Italy with her class. And what was supposed to be a normal trip becomes a teenager's dream come true.
Oh my God. If I was the head of that studio, I would have totally stuck Lizzie McGuire in unrelated non sequitur film. It was just like, 4 Navy SEALs and Lizzie McGuire.
So opening up against X2 was the Lizzie McGuire movie.
That was a show, right?
Yeah, was it Nick or Disney? I don't know which.
Animated or
something? No, just real person. Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those like live action
Like Hannah Montana.
Hannah Montana. Whatever that one with Selena Gomez was, or she was a witch. I don't know. I had kids when that was on, so it was kind of on in the background occasionally.
She's a witch.
Burn. Or make her a pop star. So that was the box office top 10 game.
What was the X-Men description?
Oh, yeah. The X-Men description. A
bunch of freaks blow up a dam. In Alaska or in Canada.
Yeah.
When anti-mutant Colonel William Stryker kidnaps Professor X and attacks his school, the X-Men must ally with their archenemy Magneto to stop him. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
I know, but some of them seem so specifically vague, and that seems so specifically specific.
Yeah, no, totally. So that was the box office top 10 game, and which brings us to the comic book character background. Was there anything new you had to tell us this week that did not apply to the many, many X-Men you told us about last time, Al?
Yes, there were. I focused on 4. I'll get to the ones I didn't go into at the end. I went by appearance order, I guess, up to a point. The first one was Kurt Wagner, a.k.a. Nightcrawler. He was created by writer Len Wein and artist David Cockrum.
Len Wein.
Uh-huh.
Hats off again. What's our... Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Pants off. That's our...
So he debuted in the giant-sized X-Men number 1, May of 1975, along with Storm, Colossus, and Thunderbird. And that's where we heard Len Wein pretty recently was with Storm. Mm-hmm. So this was the issue that kicked off the new X-Men series, the new X-Men story. And we got in a bunch of the new international team members. Mm-hmm. All right. Nightcrawler, he possessed superhuman agility, the power of teleportation, and adhesive hands and feet.
Oh.
Sticky fingers.
Yeah, so he could stick to things, too.
Yeah, and of course he did, but I just never thought about that.
Yeah.
Physical mutations. He had indigo-colored velvety fur, which allowed him to blend into shadows.
just like Liberace.
Yeah, no, Liberace could not blend into anything.
No.
Liberace had two-toed feet.
Are you
three-fingered hands. Yellow eyes.
And a heart of gold.
And the hearts of grandmothers across the country.
Pointed ears and a prehensile tail.
Yeah. What's a post-hensile tail?
It knows it can't pick anything up.
Okay, Nightcrawler teleports by displacing himself through an alternate dimension. He leaves behind a faint aroma of burning brimstone, which is a portion of the atmosphere in said alternate dimension.
And just a hint of vanilla.
Gross. That's worse than brimstone.
What?
Yeah.
His teleportation was accompanied by a characteristic BAMF noise. Which was the sound of the air rushing to fill the space he had occupied.
I loved that sound effect. It was like the schnick, like Wolverine's.
Yeah,
right.
It was the same every time.
Characteristic. BAMF has sort of come into its own as part of the lexicon. Like, you can use it as a verb now or a noun.
That's true.
There was a race of, like, interdimensional creatures called BAMFs.
I imagine Samuel Jackson would be a BAMF.
Yeah.
Black actor, I wouldn't mind.
Badass.
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I just thought of MILF.
Oh, see, now Brian, thanks. Thanks a lot. Now we get
now
an R rating.
Now the censors are going to come after us. Oh no, the podcast police.
Black.
So since we're talking about the BAMFs as a species of creatures, they were they all looked like Nightcrawler, but they were like a tiny sized.
Oh.
They looked like a stuffed doll kind of thing.
Nightcrawler babies.
Yeah,
they make your dreams come true.
Blue velvety ones.
Yeah.
That's cute.
Okay, let's see. I kind of derailed myself there. Nightcrawler must teleport to a location with which he is familiar or can clearly see to avoid teleporting into solid objects. Mm. It would turn out that he was a child of Mystique and the demonic overlord Azazel, or Azazel, however you...
Who appears in First Class.
He's in that correct. Movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Will show up there.
It's implied, I think, in that movie. We'll get to that. But.
Yeah.
That's also in Azazel that exists in the DC universe in Sandman.
Hmm.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
In Hell.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So after his birth, Mystique threw him down a well. And he was born in Germany, by the way.
What? That is some hypocritical fucked up shit. He's like, oh my god, look at this kid.
Okay, so she threw him down the well to save herself from a large angry mob who had just learned of his existence.
Well, all right.
So, I'll allow it.
Self-preservation.
A self-preservation well.
This Legend of Zelda.
I just have to get to the well.
Azazel secretly saved his son from the fall down the well and gave him to his lover, Margali Zardos, a sorceress and gypsy queen. Margali took the baby to a small Bavarian circus where she worked as a fortune teller, and Kurt was raised as part of the circus family.
It would have been much cooler if falling down the well is when the baby discovered it could teleport.
In fact, he did not discover he could teleport until his adolescence.
Puberty, yeah, that's when they say mutant.
Right. Typical for most mutants when they have powers like that. They figure it out in their teens or early teens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but obviously he looked like a little monster since the beginning.
So watching this movie and just hearing the background of it, but watching this movie, Jude over and over again said, gee, do you think this is an allegory for anything? And so much of comic books is just like, look, do you think this is an allegory for something?
Stan Lee was pretty heavy-handed.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, it's what's made the X-Men so popular. You know, any oppressed group of people can identify. So he gave that, you know, model. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Back to Kurt Wagner. After saving Kurt from some angry villagers who accused him of killing several children, Charles Xavier recruited him into the X-Men.
The dude was just constantly running away from mobs. Villagers.
He's like, where do they get all these pitchforks?
Villagers.
They don't all have hay to bale.
Or pitch.
Yeah.
The children that were killed were actually killed by Kurt's own brother, it turns out. I can't remember his name, but let's call him Stevie. So Stevie.
Little Stevie Crawler.
Yeah, Stevie killed these children, apparently going insane or something like that. But he had made Kurt promise to kill him if he had ever taken a life.
The werewolf pact.
So Kurt was forced to come and confront him and was not able to do so without killing him.
It just occurred to me before we're off Nightcrawler that he's the opposite of Blade. He's the night crawler, Blade's the day walker.
Did Stevie have the same parents? They had another kid? They stuck around together as a couple?
You know what? He might not have been a Wagner. He might have been... Okay, I remember now. He was like a foster brother.
Okay.
So he also grew up in the circus, so he's not a direct blood relative.
I see.
Okay. Wagner, thanks for asking, though. Yeah,
Azazel's last name?
Azazel Wagner?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I guess Mystique nor Azazel, neither one probably named him. He was probably named by the circus folk or by Margali Zardos, his foster mother. He was never officially adopted by anyone. Later, he would... Kurt Wagner would be a devout Catholic, something they didn't really explore right at the beginning, but they brought that in like later in our world. And at one point he studied to be a priest while he was still an active member of the X-Men. Artist David Cockrum had originally submitted his original character design for DC Comics Legion of Superheroes, and his first character design, Nightcrawler, was a demon from hell who had flubbed a mission and stayed in the human world to avoid punishment back in hell.
Okay.
And this was rejected by DC, so Cockrum brought the character, with some modifications, to Marvel when he began working on the new X-Men in 1975. Okay, moving on to Pyro. In the comics, he is known as Saint John Allardyce.
Wow.
In the movie, he's just John Allardyce. And I don't know, his mom must have sainted him at birth.
you can just do that.
Yeah,
maybe the Pope got involved? Or
I think the Pope has to be involved, yeah.
This character was created by Chris Claremont and John Byrne. Introduced in Uncanny X-Men number 141 in January of 1981.
And basically those two guys are responsible for the majority of what the X-Men are. and to what they became, John Byrne and Chris Claremont.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All the modern story threads that these movies were made were those guys.
He was Pyro was introduced as part of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. He has the power of pyrokinesis, the ability to control fire but not create fire, which is why he wears a flamethrower on his back.
Well, if with a flamethrower, we all could be pyro.
True. I think the thing was, like, he could make the fire with the flamethrower and then control it with his mind to turn it into a dragon or something like that if he wanted to.
So he's a firebender.
Yeah.
So just for more fire, I guess. That makes sense.
Let's see. He was born in Sydney, Australia. Could not figure out a practical use for his pyro skills at a young age when they came in on his teens.
He couldn't figure out how controlling fire would be helpful to anybody.
I guess not. Because as a young adult, he worked for several years in Southeast Asia as a journalist and novelist. Until he was recruited by Mystique into the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And in the comics, it noted that he never served under the original leader, Magneto. I believe Mystique was the head of the Brotherhood at that time.
How does that pitch go? Do you want to come join the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants?
Wait.
Magneto's not there anymore, so we're not really evil anymore. We're looking for more people, though.
We got Blob and Toad.
We're workshopping a name change. So.
No, it's a fraternal organization. Yes, sir. May I have another?
Oh, God.
Thank you, sir.
Next up is Yuriko Oyama, or Lady Deathstrike.
That was the coolest character to see. I remember watching this when it came out. Nice. Yeah.
She was born in Osaka, Japan, to Kenji Oyama, a.k.a. Lord Darkwind, who was the crime lord.
Sorry. I'll go ahead.
Who was the crime lord and criminal scientist who would create the process by which adamantium is bonded to bone.
Ooh.
I don't think in the comics she was actually a mutant.
Oh,
interestingly enough.
They just adamantiumed her?
Yeah. So she grew up as a self-styled warrior. And she got her powers. She hired the villain Spiral and Spiral's Body Shop to give her extensive cybernetic enhancements, including adamantium bones and talons.
If you Google her now, her wiki has powers, including healing factor, because that's why I looked it up. I was like, oh, she can heal as well?
Yeah, I saw that as well on Wikipedia.
Without the healing factors, the retractable adamantium talons really suck.
Yeah. I feel like in the comics they could have just made that one of the cybernetic implants.
Well, from my memory, she got her powers from Wolverine. They stole his powers and gave them to her at some point. That's how she got his matching power set. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember like watching the movie and being like, huh, so she's just another mutant. That's weird. It still is kind of weird. She has the exact same powers because they're all supposed to be so unique, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And he makes that big point to him in the movie about it too, which, yeah, is weird.
Lady Deathstrike operates primarily as a mercenary and an assassin. She had a bone to pick with Wolverine.
Bone to pick.
Because even though she killed her own father previously, now that she knows that his adamantium process is being used, that was like that tech was stolen from her family. So she goes after Wolverine and other characters with the adamantium bones as a point of honor, like this, because this tech was stolen from their family. Yeah. But she's still primarily a mercenary and assassin. Got to make your money somehow.
And in this movie, primarily an executive assistant. She seems to mostly do typing and computer work.
Yeah.
And get her nails done.
The character of Yuriko Oyama first appeared in Daredevil number 197 in August of 83, and Lady Deathstrike first appeared in Alpha Flight number 33 in April of 86.
Alpha Flight.
Yeah, Sasquatch.
Yep.
Yeah, that was Canada's team of superhero mutants.
Yeah. Right?
Let's ask Johnny Canuck. He doesn't play for either side.
Sasquatch, though, he's got his own fucking ulterior motives, man. You can't trust that guy.
And Puck, the little small dude who basically is being powered turning into a ball.
Wasn't Puck, he was one of Thanos' henchmen. Anyways.
Yeah. Moving on to William Stryker. He was created by writer Chris Claremont and artist Brent Anderson. And first appeared in the graphic novel X-Men, God Loves, Man Kills in 1982. Reverend William Stryker is a religious fanatic with a military past. Stryker killed his wife and newborn son when his son is born a mutant.
That is very biblical.
Yeah. He views mutants as corruptions of Satan. Huh, becoming a popular but controversial televangelist, Stryker has his followers commit hate crimes against mutants. Stryker, at one point, he has Charles Xavier kidnapped, brainwashed, and attached to a brain power machine that will kill all mutants.
What year was Stryker created?
1982.
God damn.
Right, that was right at the beginning of the televangelist boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not subtle, but...
Yeah, Swaggart and the Jim and Tammy, they were all coming into their own right around that time.
Well, I mean, and they had the president's year.
That they kind were coming of into other crazy. People, too.
Yeah.
In order to stop William Stryker in his attempt to kill the mutants, the X-Men are forced to join forces with Magneto to save Xavier. And that was all in the graphic novel, and that was... basically where the storyline for this movie came along.
I find it interesting that in the modern MCU, they give story credit to the comic writers from which they took the basis. But in these earlier movies, they do not do that they don't get writing credits. The comic writers that came up with the stories.
So his involvement with the Weapon X project, there's no mention of said involvement in the comics until 2017. There was a storyline called Weapons of Mutant Destruction.
Wow.
So that was unique to this film, was the involvement with Weapon X.
Okay.
And that's all I went into in depth this time. We saw a few other mutants, namely Kitty Pryde and Colossus. Kitty Pryde was in the last one briefly. I didn't go into them because I think they're going to get bigger roles in later movies, and we'll talk about them later.
There was a small beast Easter egg, too.
Yes. Dr. Hank McCoy was on the TV when the security guard was in the bar.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. You sure it wasn't just Frasier on TV?
Yes.
Playing in the background?
Yeah. I'm sure.
All right. Well, thank you, Al, for the dive into the comic origins, which brings us to the movie origins. So this was directed again by Bryan Singer, who we won't talk about. Screenplay. It had four different names attached to the screenplay. We have Michael Dougherty, who worked a lot with Bryan Singer, it appears. He also would write some comic books. Oh God, let's see. He some DC mostly. It looks like he did some Superman work. But as far as films go, he wrote Season's Greetings, Urban Legends 2, Bloody Mary. He did, we'll see him again on Superman Returns, the 2007 horror film Trick or Treat, which he also directed. Krampus. Oh my God, he wrote and directed Krampus. Wow. He has a story by an X-Men Apocalypse. He wrote and directed the 2019 Godzilla King of the Monsters. And he's working on Godzilla versus Kong, which should be coming out next year.
Sweet.
We got Dan Harris also has a writing credit on this. Let's see. He wrote Dancing with Agnes, Urban Chaos Theory, Imaginary Heroes. He also wrote Urban Legends Bloody Mary along with what's his face. He also has a Superman Returns credit. He also has a Trick or Treat credit and an X-Men Apocalypse credit as well. So he worked a lot with Michael Dougherty. David Hayter. Let's see. He is primarily, he has a writing credit on this, but he's actually primarily a voice actor. He's does the voice for Solid Snake.
Hmm.
And in fact, a lot of the Metal, you know, yeah, on the Metal Gear series. Let's see. He has writing credits, however, on Street Fighter II. oh, wait, I'm sorry. That's a dubbing. Okay. Writing credits. Here we go. Writing credits. There we go. So, writing credits on the first X-Men, apparently. We had him on there. Scorpion King. He'll have a writing credit on The Watchmen, the movie, not the series. And he's currently writing an untitled live-action Voltron movie.
Wow.
So, yay to that. Zach Penn. Let's see. Writing credits on a lot of the X-Men movies. He had a writing credit on Last Action Hero, PCU, Men in Black, Ants, Inspector Gadget, Charlie's Angels, Nutty Professor 2. He seems to be he was brought in to do a rewrite on this. So he seems to be a guy they bring in to rewrite a lot of stuff. Incredible Hulk. He has a story credit on Avengers, Ready Player One, Suicide Squad. He has a credit on the upcoming Matrix 4.
What? Oh, wow.
Yeah, so a lot of stuff. Zach Penn is kind of a pinch hitter, it seems. Cast, of course, we have returning Patrick Stewart, Hugh Jackman, Ian McKellen, Halle Berry, Famke Janssen, James Marsden, Rebecca Romaine Stamos, Anna Paquin, Sean Ashmore, returning as Iceman. And let's see, we have Brian Cox playing Stryker in this one. Brian Cox has a long and illustrious career.
He was the very first Hannibal Lecter.
Yes. Yes, he was.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah. In 1986's Manhunter.
Wow.
Let's see, he played Rob Roy. No, he played Killer in Rob Roy. And he played Argyle Wallace in Braveheart. He was in both movies. he was in Chain Reaction, Glimmer Man, Long Kiss Goodnight, Kiss the Girls, Rushmore. He's kind of a character actor. So, yeah, Alan Cumming. Let's see. He was in GoldenEye, Emma, Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion. Spice World, the Spice Girls movie. Eyes Wide Shut.
No, wait. Spice World, that's Dune, right? With the Spice Girls.
Spice up your life. Spice must flow.
If in the upcoming Dune, Aronofsky Dune movie, they don't include Spice Up Your Life, then I'm going to write.
And just a, like, yeah.
Wouldn't
like
that be the
rap song?
The most clever cameo in the whole world, though, to have the Spice Girls as like aliens.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
I would lose my mind, yeah, and I would instantly have faith in humanity.
Yeah, yes. Seriously. I'd be like, that is the most meta joke and worth it. That'd be like a Mel Brooks level of like meta humor.
Oh my God, that would be brilliant.
Like, quick, I need a word that rhymes with Quinsat Haderach.
get put it in your backpack.
That Quintet ever. Oh, most deep.
That's some Pitbull level. Anyways, we've got Alec Cumming, and he was in Eyes Wide Shut, The Flintstones, Viva Rock Vegas. The 1-2 punch of Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. Viva Rock Vegas.
Wait, did he play Barney Rubble? Who was he in Viva Rock Vegas?
He played the Great Gazoo.
Oh, obviously. I remember that.
And he also had a secondary role as Mick Jagged.
You know, Halle Berry was in the first one.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, Halle Berry.
Oh, no. Halle Berry was in Viva Rock Vegas.
Was she?
In the second one?
Yeah, she played Sharon Stone.
The secretary slash villainess?
I don't remember. I actually never saw the movie, but she was in Viva Rock Vegas.
Okay. Wow.
So
the same one as Alan Cumming.
Correct.
Okay. Alan Cumming is in, like, everything, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't even want to go into all of these, but he's in a ton of movies.
I saw him most recently. He played King James in an episode of Doctor Who.
Oh, wow. Huh.
In 2018.
Let's see. Iceman.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
She was in the first Flintstone.
Okay. Sorry.
No, my bad.
I just remember.
I don't remember seeing the second one.
Okay.
But I clearly remember the first one.
I never saw either of them. I just recall from our last X-Men movie when we were talking about Halle Berry.
Oh, I see. All right.
So speaking of Halle Berry, before I go into Iceman, or as I just pronounced it, Iceman. Between the first X-Men and this one, she won her Oscar for, what was it, Monster?
Monsters Ball.
Monsters Ball, yeah. Okay. Which I still, representation aside, I still feel that was an extremely overrated performance. Anyways. apparently the whole thing, she had almost nothing to do in this film, but after she won the Oscar, they rewrote it to give her all that stuff with Nightcrawler.
And it's so obvious. She's piloting the what is that called? The Blackbird.
Yeah.
You can tell they went back and tried to shoehorn her into almost everything they could logically.
Yeah. Well, and at the end, especially at the end, it's like, I know what'll snap him out of this: being chilly.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Once we get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. But yeah. So. Anyways.
Again, before we move on to Iceman, Alan Cumming.
Iceman.
Iceman. There was a note that Neil Patrick Harris auditioned for this role.
Of Iceman?
Nightcrawler.
Oh, of Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler. Wow. Wow. Yeah.
But Alan Cumming, turns out, probably still speaks fluent German.
Oh.
So it was kind of the obvious choice.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Huh.
Finally, that pays off for someone.
Yes. Iceman is played by Sean Ashmore, best known as playing Iceman. And yeah. Jake Berenson in the television series Animorphs. Aaron Stanford played Pyro. He was also in The Hills Have Eyes and Nikita. Oh, and the television series 12 Monkeys.
That's right. That's how I recognize him.
I haven't watched that yet. I keep meaning to get around to it. Is it good?
It's decent. It's all right.
I watched a little and did not finish it.
A little confusing sometimes.
I can't imagine why it would be based on the source material.
Yeah.
Let's see. Kelly, who played Deathstrike? Daniel Cudmore played Colossus. This movie has 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. I could not find a clip of the Ebert and Roper. I'm sure they reviewed it, though, because I found plenty of X-Men 3 clips online. So we'll be looking forward to that when we get to it. Roger Ebert wrote, X2, X-Men United, is the kind of movie you enjoy for its moments, even though they never add up. Made for, and possibly by, those with short attention spans, it lives in the present, providing one amazing spectacle after another, and not even trying to develop a story arc. Having trained on the original X-Men, I tried to experience the film entirely in the present, and the fact is I had a good time. Dumb, but good. I think they put that on the poster, didn't they? Dumb, but good.
Yeah, dumb, but good. It's accurate.
That's...
Another quick bit of trivia. After production for this movie, Hugh Jackman was offered the role of Frank Castle in The Punisher, 2004.
Wow. Oh, wow.
But he turned it down to do Van Helsing.
Oh, wow.
Which, yeah, I kind of like the movie. But I read a little factoid that he wasn't aware of what a Wolverine was, and he wasn't very aware of the character Wolverine. So when he was first cast, he just started studying up on wolves as much as he could.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And yet he nails it.
Oh, yeah.
He nails Wolverine.
Jude, again, I watch a lot of these with Jude. So I pointed out again that does Wolverine's hair just do that, or does he spend a lot of time on it every day?
It looks styled.
It super looks styled.
Take one of those like round brushes.
As a comic book character, it doesn't stand out. But when you put that on an actual human being, it couldn't possibly be natural. Are you guys ready to jump into X2?
Yes.
Ready as I'll ever be.
I think I used this last time, but X-Men Accelerate.
You couldn't say X-Men Unite?
No.
Okay.
No.
I said what I said.
If you're not going to say Iceman correctly.
Iceman.
It is now Iceman.
I'm going to throw on the Iceman. You.
Iceman. So here it is. X2, X-Men United. The open with a voiceover. People don't like mutants. Then yet another credit sequence about flying through CGI bodies. This is three in a row for Marvel.
And then it merged with a computer.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But yes, same graphic.
Yeah, three in a row. Then we're at the White House. A mutant sneaks in with a tour group and attacks the president. He can teleport short distances and he's all blue with the tail. That's the mutant, not the president. After an exciting fight scene, he's barely stopped by the Secret Service from plunging a dagger into the president's chest. He disappears.
He takes a bullet in the arm and he get like distinctly the sound of a dog whimper. It sounds just like a dog getting kicked or something like that.
President badass.
Before he bamps away.
Oh, it was Nightcrawler.
Yeah. President did not take a bullet.
Yeah, fine. So this held up really well, this whole opening sequence with Nightcrawler and the Secret Service. It looked real good. Yeah.
It did,
I remember being blown away by it in 2003. And
Yeah. It even sounds like BAMF.
Yeah. Yeah. The BAMF. I bet they did a lot of work to get the sound effect on that. Right.
But yeah, I was impressed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very much so. Let's see. In the snowy north, a severely underdressed Wolverine arrives at the remains of the Alkali Industrial Complex.
I noticed that, too, because we were talking about he had six layers when he was leaving the mansion that time. And here, when he's actually walking around in the snow in northern Canada, he's only got three layers.
He's stripped down.
He's got the leather jacket, the button up, and the white beater.
He stripped down as he got further north.
Yeah.
It's like, it's good to be home, to feel the cold biting. Yeah, I can see Wolverine doing that, though. Just being a hard ass for being a hard ass to sick.
Yeah.
Let's ask Johnny Canuck. He doesn't play for either.
We cut to a museum. The X-School is on a field trip. Jean Grey is having trouble controlling her power. There's some trouble with teens smoking in the food court.
Yeah, remember when you could smoke in the food courts of museums?
Right. I don't think you could in 2003.
You remember when there were food courts in museums? I love Andrea pointed this out. She's reading everyone's mind at this exhibit right around her. Not one person's thinking about dinosaurs. No one at the museum is thinking about the museum.
You know, that would have been really funny, though. Like, oh, my God. Imagine what it would have been like to get eaten by a dinosaur.
Right.
As a thought.
Yeah, exactly.
It was pointed out that in the commotion of words that she hears, the commotion of thoughts, she also hears the phrase "to the shelter," which was said in the Oval Office back in the previous scene.
Ah, interesting.
So she's hearing a little back in time, sort of, or unless that was concurrently. But then we also hear Wolverine shout "No," and Rogue say they're going to kill him, which were two lines of dialogue from the mansion. So she's actually hearing into the future as well.
Whoa, that's actually really cool.
Far out.
Yeah. Huh. Wow.
I also, I liked the nod to Sabretooth with the Sabretooth tiger skeleton.
Yeah.
In the museum. I was kind of hoping that he was going to come back in this, but he didn't.
Yeah.
Initially, he and Toad were supposed to appear in this movie, showing that they weren't dead, but they wisely decided that they had too many mutant characters.
Yeah,
that would have been so cool though to have them like sitting in a cafe, just like hanging out, being like, "How long until we get the call?" You know, that would have been really funny.
That would have been funny
because Magneto doesn't need them, obviously.
I'm just hanging out in a cafe, so be like, "So what'd you do yesterday?" Well, you know, I started reading 50 Shades of Grey. What have you been up to?
But I remember thinking, and you know, Lady Deathstrike's pretty badass, so I wouldn't have taken her out. But they kind of should have saved Sabretooth for the second one, because it would have been cool if there was another like badass Weapon X individual that had been stuck in the complex all that time.
Yeah,
you know, like,
either Sabretooth, or I also thought of Omega Red would have been kind of badass to see, but yeah. Could have done stuff with them.
Yeah, they definitely missed an opportunity by having it be a shutdown facility.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody freezes in the food court.
Yeah.
Professor X shows up. Then they hear about the presidential attack and head back to the mansion.
Most of the extras that were in that scene, were they in the food court scene, were actually mimes.
Huh.
Like, by trade.
Okay.
So because
they're good at
because they're
freezing.
Used to standing still.
Okay.
Yeah, operative word is used.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, we got a, you know, a paratrooping expert to help us with the, you know, skydiving scenes, but it's just, yeah.
I did notice there was one guy, like when they first froze, that in the back, his just like turned and looked around and was like, "Oh shit, I'm supposed to freeze."
Huh. Yeah. Kids in a drama class.
Yeah.
That effect is cool. Every time they use it in this movie, it's very, very cool.
Yeah, it is. And it's so
simple.
I guess
the mimes were worth it. Yeah.
Back at the mansion, Professor X tells them he's traced the mutant that attacked the president, or is attempting to. He wants Storm and Jean to go pick him up in the jet.
Can you pay a mime in invisible money?
Ooh.
Yeah, they're mimes. They're not fools.
This could revolutionize my mime budget for the month.
I mean, can it just be imaginary money? It doesn't have to be invisible. I can
print. Right. Yes, print. Imaginary money.
I can I can print money that just says mime money on it and give it to him with a smile.
Invisible money is more expensive.
Unzip their little door and stick it through.
Yeah.
Oh. Have a good time.
They have a zipper door in their box.
I don't know how mimes work. I assume it's a tent. They have to carry that thing with them everywhere they go. It's probably not heavy.
Yeah, right. They have to pack it up, put it on their back.
What do you guys think it is? A porta potty or a phone booth? I mean,
there's a mime in that.
Mime just shits in the street corner. Sorry.
The miming being in a porta potty, but actually taking a dump.
It's art, goddammit.
Back at the White House, Colonel William Stryker meets with the president and Senator Kelly, who we all...
I just want to say that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people were sucking titties at Woodstock.
they're mama's titties.
He doesn't say mom.
He does. Oh, yeah. He is saying he sucking your mother's titty at Woodstock.
Yeah, I don't think he was the only one.
No.
He clashed it up by simply saying tit.
Oh, yes.
Oh. Yeah. Well, titties is way funnier.
That's, yeah, irrefutably. So he meets with Senator Kelly, who we all saw get mystiqued in the last movie.
Turned to water man.
Yeah.
Gelatinous man.
Stryker convinces the president to let him conduct a raid on the X school. Mystique / Kelly wants to visit Magneto in prison. Stryker talks about Woodstock titties. Back at the school, Bobby Iceman gets cock blocked by the return of Wolverine. Wolverine flirts with Jean and butts heads with Cyclops. Meanwhile, in his prison, Magneto is being drugged by Stryker for information on Xavier and Cerebro. Wolverine talks with Xavier. He wants him to read his mind again to get past his amnesia, but the professor says no. He puts Wolverine in charge of the kids as he and Scott are going to visit Magneto. Let's get all the X-Men out except Wolverine. Hope nothing bad happens while we're gone, guys.
Well, he handles shit.
Yeah.
It was a cute moment where he puts his cigar out on his hand.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that.
Apparently the professor lets him smoke anywhere in the mansion except in Cerebro.
Yeah, pretty lax.
Probably expensive to clean the walls in there.
Yeah. Cerebro,
yeah.
Stuck to the electronics.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And when you're eating brunch, you just really don't want to deal with someone's secondhand throat.
It's true.
Which is worse, the smell of cigar smoke from Xavier's perspective, the smell of the cigar smoke, or the smell of Wolverine's burning hand?
That's an awesome point.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that. Oh, that was gross.
Meanwhile, Mystique sneaks into Stryker's office. She hacks into his computer. So his password is just him saying his name.
Yeah.
And that's not very secure. Like anyone with a tape recorder can get into his computer.
Yeah.
You know,
and I know that maybe jump drives weren't a thing or they weren't popular or whatever, but that was easily an hour-long print job that she put in.
Right.
Like, she should have had at least 4 error messages saying the toner was low or you're out of Scion.
Yeah, no, the printing out the papers is hilarious.
Like the Weapon X program, all of it. Yeah. She's like, come on.
There were some cool names on that list. There was like Moira McTaggart. You guys probably have a list.
I have a partial list. I looked it up later, and it's extensive how many names are on there. But they kind of made a point of pointing out Remy LeBeau, because I guess he was right above Eric Lencher. Mm-hmm. But the cursor like paused on that for a second before dropping down. Who we all know is Gambit.
Yeah.
Who never made it into a Singer movie.
No,
right?
he was supposed to be in this one. But they again felt there were just too many X-Men. Him and Beast were both supposed to be in this.
That scene was actually their appearance was going to be at the end when Xavier is killing all the mutants. They just showed quick shots of Hank McCoy and Remy LeBeau being affected by Cerebro.
Mm-hmm. Sitting at the same cafe with Sabretooth and Toad.
Sabretooth and Toad are friends.
They're rollerblading together just down the street.
Has anybody ever read those Frog and Toad are friends?
Sabretooth and Toad. Let's see. She discovers Stryker's plans to build a second Cerebro. Then she sneaks back out.
As a janitor.
And she's all Cerebros before Cerebro.
Cerebros. Jean and Storm arrive in Boston. They find Nightcrawler, who's apparently living on the set of a Guns N' Roses video. He tells them he wasn't in control of himself when he attacked the president. They find a mark on him that matches the one left on Magneto when Stryker used his mind control acid.
I found a translation, all the German that he's shouting at them when he's bamfing around in the church. In German, he's saying, "Get out. I am the minion of the devil. I am the spawn of evil."
So he's trying to scare them by claiming he's evil in a language they don't understand.
Yep, yeah, that'll do it.
Well, he is in Germany, so he probably thought they were German. Well, they were speaking English. No, he speaks English, too.
They were in Boston.
He was in Boston.
They were in Boston.
Yeah.
So. No good Southie bastard.
Then back at the school, Wolverine has a bad dream, so he goes to eat ice cream with Bobby. In their jammies.
It's a cute little effect and character development when Logan hands him the warm soda bottle and has him blow on it to chill it immediately.
Yeah, the first of a number of Dr. Pepper's instances I noticed.
Throughout this movie, I guess I'll just say now, they have a better grasp of show, don't tell, as far as the powers go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Point. Absolutely. Let's see. Charles and Scott visit Eric, and we discover that Stryker had a son named Jason that was sent to Xavier to be cured. Now, Xavier and Magneto get sleepy gassed, and Stryker's creepy assistant lady beats up Cyclops.
And so they just made Leech be his son for the movie, right? I don't think that...
Recall in the original graphic novel, Stryker's son was born a mutant and he killed him almost immediately.
Ah, right. Okay, that's what I thought.
But let's see, back at the school, Stryker invades, he captures a few kids, although Colossus escapes with the majority. So this is the last we see of Cyclops and those kids until... like the very end of the movie. What did they do that whole time? Were they just hanging out in the woods waiting?
Well, and you can see the product of having to go back and stick Halle Berry into everything because, yeah, there was almost no Cyclops. And, you know, it's not like Cyclops is that dynamic of a character, but he's more interesting than he was allowed to be, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And James Marsden is cool, but yeah, he was totally eliminated from
this. Oh, yeah. Well, and absolutely. In fact, like, where is Cyclops? Oh, he's being re-educated. That's it for the entire middle hour and a half of the film.
Yeah. Yep. And he was the leader.
Yeah. Storm absolutely would have had that size role were it not for Halle Berry winning the Oscar. At the school, Stryker recognizes Wolverine. He's like, "Hey, I know you." But then he escapes with Bobby, Rogue, and Pyro. Stryker is stoked to get his hands on Cerebro.
Apparently, the ice wall that they shot in that in the corridor that separated Wolverine and Stryker, that was a real ice wall.
Ooh!
Wow.
I don't know how they made it, but it weighed around 3,500 pounds.
Huh.
Yeah. Well, it's probably a mold like you know, for ice cube trays. Yeah.
Well, same a lot principle. Of ice cube trays.
Yeah.
They built it brick by brick with ice cubes.
The same principle. I mean, not the same shape.
Let's see. In a bar, Mystique seduces and drugs Magneto's jail guard and injects him with some vitamin supplements. More iron. More testicles mean more iron.
Just a little bit ago, the Wolverine and the kids have now stolen Cyclops' car.
Yeah.
So
Yes.
He keeps taking Scott's vehicles.
Yeah.
Wolverine and the kids.
Wolverine and the boys.
Six pack.
Yeah. Okay. So at a secret base, Stryker and Xavier discuss mutants, and Stryker reveals he's lobotomized and harvested the fluid from the brain of his powerfully telekinetic son, who he wheels in to invade Xavier's brain. So much of this movie is just inside people's brains.
Except when it would be helpful.
Yeah.
And I'll point that out.
Okay.
I don't know if I knew this and forgot, but the fluid that Stryker sprays on the back of other mutants' necks for the mind control is actually coming from his son's brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
That wasn't just clear, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can see the tube on his back, like harvesting it.
You got a tube.
And he has a line of dialogue that goes by real quick explaining that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So then in Boston, Wolfie and the teens arrive at Bobby's parents' house where they change clothes and get ready for the big concert. Bobby and Rogue finally get to make out a little bit. Unfortunately, his parents and brother arrive home.
Yeah, so would condoms and dental dams, would those work with Rogue?
I mean, if they,
I don't know.
If he
had zero skin contact.
So if he remained dressed and wore a condom, so there was no actual physical contact, I imagine they could probably have sex. Yeah.
Good to know. Because those mutant abstinence programs just don't work.
They don't.
Because here, he's able to kiss her, rather. I assumed that he like froze his lips over a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's why initially it works out, but it doesn't last for very long. Her powers eventually override his.
The heat of the kiss melts the ice. Melts the Iceman's heart.
Iceman.
Let's see. Back at Magneto's prison, the guard that gets Mystique arrives, and Magneto uses the extra iron in his body to kill everybody and escape. That was a pretty cool sequence too.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Back at Bobby's place, he reveals to his parents that he's a mutant, and they don't take the news well. In fact, his brother calls the cops. So there was, they used the line, "Have you tried not being a mutant?"
Yeah.
Which was a direct lift of the, I don't know if it was purposeful or just parallel thinking, but which was a direct lift of the season 3 episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, in which Buffy's mom finds out Buffy's a Slayer and says, "Have you tried not being the Slayer?"
Well, and it's obviously remarking on what queer people have had to
obviously
deal with
for
centuries. Like, well, just try to not be gay.
Yeah, exactly.
Ian McKellen actually worked with the script writers in making this scene seem more like a coming out experience for homosexuality.
Yeah, well, they succeeded. Yeah.
Yeah.
The vibes there.
Very much so. This was specifically the scene where Jude said, "Is this an allegory for something, you think?"
Right. Well, and the school itself is, you know, what do they call that? Reprogramming or
re-education.
They send queer kids to learn how to be straight.
Anyways, Wolverine contacts Storm and Jean, who are flying back with Nightcrawler just as the cops arrive. The cops shoot Wolverine, and Pyro decides to fuck him up real good.
I love the put the knives down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good line.
I can't.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. And kind of pointed at there's always this like weird police thing that happens in superhero movies where the police don't understand the power dynamic.
Yeah.
And I think that they do that very well in this scene where he's like, "I just have knives.
Yeah.
Right. They're just stuck to my hands. What do you want me to fucking do?" And then he shoots him in the head. Because he moves a little bit. So it really plays that whole thing out really well.
And that was the most realistic part of the film.
Well, absolutely. Holy shit. Well, and the fact that Wolverine just like clunk.
Yeah.
Down for the count. And they're all phased by it very quickly. This is one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until Pyro loses his fucking
mind. Just Pyro's right. out.
It's like, yeah, Wolverine's going to be fine, dude.
Well, okay. Yeah. So, and he can't. So, and even in the film, he specifically says that he can't create fire, only control it. So, he lights the Zippo, and then all of that fire comes out of the Zippo. That was a lot of fire.
I feel like that was like him being angry or something. That was, yeah, because I've thought about that before, because he explicitly says it out loud.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there must be a biological way that it stokes the flame.
Yeah.
He's like using the oxygen in the air to create more, maybe, with the fire that exists, something like that.
Yeah.
Rogue stops him by sucking his fire juice. Then the Jet arrives and they make their escape. Meanwhile, Jason Stryker is messing with Xavier's mind, catfishing him by pretending to be a little girl and leading him through a brain version of the school to Cerebro.
With Rogue, we get to see her use his powers too, which is kind of cool. She draws the fire back down.
Yeah.
Puts the fires out immediately, which is really neat. Not just making him stop.
Yeah, she actually pulls the fires down. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, she utilizes the power. They don't do that well enough in the first movie, I think.
Okay, yeah, I agree.
By strapping her to the thing, you know, and healing. They're very subtle.
I'm back in the jet. They get shot down despite controlling the weather and having a telekinetic superwoman and teleporter on board.
But exactly. Why would she not just convince the other pilots that either, well, whatever, hypnotized, used her telekinesis? Why would it just makes no sense.
No, it doesn't.
She's trying to control objects when she could just control minds and it'd be easier. And secondly, they have no contingency plan for encountering the Air Force.
Right.
When they're in their giant unauthorized, you know, they're like, shit, there are other planes behind us. Everyone's so surprised.
No, yeah. It was totally like, just act cool, guys, when they pull us over.
Fly natural.
Yeah.
Where the hell? Okay, that plane is millions and millions and millions of dollars. Whose mind did Xavier control to get that from the military?
Right.
Well, Hank built it, supposedly.
Mm.
You know, in the... Hank McCoy, genius level intellect.
Yeah.
Xavier is using his ability to read minds to get stock tips.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Luckily.
Is that unethical?
Well,
if he can just do it naturally, if he's like, I can't turn it off. I can't help myself.
Yeah, it's super insider trading.
It's like they're like shouting in my brain.
that scheme was actually, I just watched the Boys again.
Oh, good series.
And they used that in there. Mesmer, he was disgraced for using his powers to get insider tips.
Yeah. Did you see the trailer for season 2, Al?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
It looks good.
Looks good.
Let's see. They're saved by Magneto at the last second. Lucky thing, he happened to be right below where they were crashing.
Yeah, that was convenient.
They camp out that night, discuss their plans. Magneto tells them that Stryker wants to use his Cerebro and kill Professor X to kill every mutant on the planet from his secret base. Plus, he tells them that Stryker's the one that put the adamantium on Wolverine's bones, whereas Wolverine put the bones on the hearts of America. Jean Grey uses her mind powers to look into Nightcrawler's head to discover the location of the base, which is underground at Alkali Lake. The look on Wolverine's face when they're like, it's underground. He was like, wait a minute. So I drove to Northern Canada on a motorcycle and all I had to do was find a door that goes down. Yeah.
Back before this whole scene, when Magneto saves the plane from crashing, he has the comment to Mystique, when will these people learn how to fly?
Yeah.
So
they're
it's
so
sort of
catty, those two.
Well, it's a double-edged sort of thing, because it also refers to the fact that Jean Grey and Rogue, who in the comics can fly, uh-huh. are not able to fly in this movie. In these movies. It also... is a joke on how badly the X-Men fly and land their plane.
Yeah. Yeah, they are bad at it.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Speaking of Jean Grey, so Famke Janssen is giving me like super mom vibes in this movie, yeah. Like her whole look.
Yeah, like, that hairdo.
Yeah. Like I just
told her hairdresser younger.
Yeah, I just want her to like give me some Sunny D and Totino's pizza rolls.
Exactly.
All right. So later, Jean. Damn it. Okay, so later Jean cheats on her boyfriend a little bit with Wolverine. And then Mystique tries to seduce him, although he's strangely not interested in her, even when she turns into the most alluring form of General Stryker. I laughed out loud when she turned into Stryker and was like, what about this?
She still has her scars from the previous movie when he stabbed her.
Yeah.
Yep. It's interesting that the scar persists. I mean, you see it earlier when they have that shot of Magneto's head and just Mystique's chest and abdomen. Mm. So they're just showing off her boobs behind Magneto's face. But she has the three scars there as well. It's interesting that the scars persist when she's copying someone.
It was,
she may be choosing to keep them too.
Yeah.
She's an artist. Or Brian Singer.
She's got a little thing for Logan.
Yeah.
It's a memory scar.
It was cool that Rebecca Romijn Stamos got to be in the film without the makeup.
Yeah. I was thinking that. Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence, and you know, she was an Oscar winner too, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, she got to appear as herself way more.
I'd forgot how incredibly beautiful Rebecca Romijn Stamos was.
Mrs. Jerry O'Connell.
Yeah. Well, and Mrs. Uncle Jesse.
Yeah. I know. How do you leave John Stamos? First of all, you have mercy. That's
number one. Hey, Josh, cut it out.
Dave, fool you.
Oh, Mr. Alanis Morissette, you mean? I still remember, this is a memory I have, when that song first came out, You Ought to Know, of you and I sitting in a car talking about it, and we garbled the lyrics. It was like, would she have your baby in a theater?
Yes, I still sing that to this day. Yeah. Would she have your baby in a theater?
I hope not. That's not safe. X-Men do stuff. The next day they fly to Alkali Lake, and on the way Magneto sweet talks Pyro. Then at the base,
after being two little mean girls,
right? You know, like, oh my god, they're so catty at first. So,
and they're like, we love what you did to your hair. And I think, and she does exactly what I've been talking about. I haven't been able to articulate it, but the look on Anna Paquin's face is exactly what I was talking about all this time. She starts to take off the gloves. She's completely expressionless. She's like she's mid-fart.
Yeah, and mouth like half open all the time.
Uh-huh. I was like, you don't even look angry.
No.
Yeah.
Let's see. At the base, Stryker Cerebro's finished, and he intends to test it on the mutant kids he captured. The X-Men arrive at the base, and Mystique sneaks in as Wolverine. Then Stryker, she gets into the control room, where she opens the door for the rest of the mutants. Pyro, Iceman, and Rogue stay in the plane. I thought I liked Mystique's, like, giving the finger, and then her little kissy face is Stryker.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are both great. Why did the three inexperienced mutants have to wait in the plane? You know, like, I know they're not ready, but they're powerful.
Yeah, they can do stuff.
Like, oh, they might come to harm? Well, so might those other little children.
Yeah.
That you're going in there for. I don't know.
It's,
Pyro could have been helpful.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, no, it's just so that we can push them off in this narrative direction.
Thank you.
Yeah. Stryker takes his troops to guard Cerebro, and Magneto and the X-Men get into the control room. From there, they split up. Wolverine goes after Stryker, Storm and Nightcrawler go to rescue the kids, Jean, Mystique, and Magneto go after the Professor and Cyclops.
And Marianne.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters we're dealing with at this point.
And the rest.
Meanwhile, in Cerebro, Jason is mind-raping Professor X into killing all the mutants in the world. Jean runs into Cyclops, who is under Stryker's mind control. And they fight while Nightcrawler and Storm get the kids out of their cell. The Cyclops-Jean Grey fight causes some major structural damage to the dam there underneath, and Stryker realizes it's going to collapse. So the fight apparently knocked Cyclops out of Stryker's control.
Yeah, didn't know you could do that.
Right? Yeah, apparently just you can just get jarred out of being mind-controlled by Stryker, so...
That never happened to Lady Deathstrike, apparently.
Yeah. Then Wolverine... Yeah, she never got jostled.
Right.
There was, back when Stryker was talking to Xavier, there was a moment where she was starting to slip out of control.
Mm. Yeah.
And had to get resprayed.
Yeah, she comprehended something that Charles said in regards to, yeah. The abuse of mutants. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. She has a look in her eye like, wait, what? Wait.
What's going on? Yeah. So Stryker and Deathstrike arrive. The fight. Okay. Wolverine finds the operating chamber where he had his bone therapy done, complete with some liquid adamantium. It's like a reverse bone marrow transplant. Stryker.
Yeah, they add to it.
Yeah. Yeah, they electroplate your bones.
There are the flashbacks to the Weapon X scenes that Wolverine has. When they show him running down the hallway, almost naked, there was an anecdote that he relayed, I believe, on Jay Leno, that when he was shooting that scene, almost naked, he ran down the hallway and like turned a corner, and all the female cast members and James Marsden's mother were standing there hooting and waving dollar bills.
That's funny. That's cute.
That's
awesome.
On set hijinks.
He is a hunk.
Let's see. Stryker and Deathstrike arrive. Wolverine has to fight her. It's a pretty even match because she's got an adamantium healing thing going on too. Then Wolverine finally wins when he pumps her full of his bone juice.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
During this sequence, the whole underground chamber thing, there was supposed to be a Nightcrawler Toad fight.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Well, we know that Toad beats Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler is a worm.
But we also know what happens to a toad when it gets struck by lightning.
Same as everything else.
At this point, Professor X finds all the mutants in the world with Cerebro and starts to mind melt them. All the mutants get wicked migraines and fall down, except Magneto because he's wearing his special hat. He gets into Cerebro, stops a mutant brain twisting, and reprograms Cerebro to kill all humans. He starts floating up when he's doing that all. Jude asks, like, why does he have to float to do that? And I was like, he doesn't. Ian McKellen can just float.
He can.
There was an early draft of the script that had Magneto saving Xavier from Cerebro 2 at this point and escaping with the other X-Men on the plane, which is more like the original storyline in the graphic novel. But they had two reasons, I guess, to make Magneto to preserve his ruthless character,
right,
in the eyes of viewers, and also specifically to give Storm and Nightcrawler more to do in the third act.
Yep, that Oscar.
Boring.
Uh huh. Let's see. Stryker's about to escape in his helicopter when Wolverine Oh, and by the way, anytime they say kill all humans, I just think of Bender.
Yeah, same here.
Meanwhile,
hey, baby, exterminate, kill all the humans.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Stryker's about to escape in his helicopter when Wolverine finds him and roughs him up a while. The damn alarm goes off. Good thing there's a damn alarm. And Wolverine.
That damn alarm. Stop.
And Wolverine ties him up to the helicopter, then goes to try to rescue his friends. The mutants gather at the door to Cerebro, where inside Professor X is giving all the humans the bad brain feels.
Why didn't either Magneto or Wolverine kill Stryker? And it's not an honor code thing, because Wolverine kills several soldiers and cops.
Wolverine is straight up murdering people throughout this film. Yeah.
Yeah. Killed Stryker. What the fuck?
He wanted to come back and find Stryker and get more information from him.
Oh.
But why did Magneto not kill him? That makes no sense.
No clue.
Yeah. Yeah, he wanted to kill all mutants and he let them live.
Well, because he thought he was going to die in the dam first.
Yeah, you know, just take care of it. You're there. Mystique, it would take her like 3 seconds.
Well, and you're using your power to make the chains tighten around him. Yeah, just do it a little tighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, yeah, you could do it. He has enough power where he could like cut him into pieces with chains.
Well, the real reason is because they wanted that scene at the end where Wolverine inexplicably doesn't put the kid down. That kid is clearly able to walk on his own.
Yeah, he's like super lucid. The kid's like talking. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
He just wanted you to carry.
I just like the feel of being in your arms.
So strong. He's us. He's all the people watching the movie. That's who that kid is.
Yep. And our blue tongues. Yep. Let's see. Nightcrawler and Storm teleport inside. Storm uses the power of inclement weather to break Jason's hold on the professor's mind. Meanwhile, Magneto and Mystique tie Stryker to the dam and steal his helicopter, taking Pyro with them. At that moment, the dam begins to crumble. The mutants escape, leaving Jason Stryker to die. They get out of the base alive, but they're going to be killed when the dam bursts and floods the valley. Rogue and Bobby arrive in the jet. Wolverine has one last verbal sparring match with Stryker, and then on the jet they discover that the vertical thrusters are offline, and they're all gonna die again.
Where we're getting to it. The right mutant for the right job. Mm-hmm. This was fucking ridiculous. Like, why would it be Jean Grey trying to stop a wall of water when A, you have Storm, who can create a water spout and just get it... And then you have Professor X, but you have Iceman, who could turn it all into ice and stop it. Same with the jet's not starting, the jet's not working. A few minutes later, she does use her powers, but it's like she turned the engines on. She should have done that right away.
I can't. Yeah.
I don't understand.
I can't believe that between her and Professor X, they couldn't get the plane off the ground without her. Right. Having to go out there and
or stop the water. But again, they wouldn't even need to do it telekinetically because you have Iceman and Storm.
Yeah.
Well, you have Xavier, who can just hand in glove every single member of the team too.
Right.
He's known to do that from time to time.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, it doesn't make.
Yeah. They all just kind of sat on their hands. That's right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
It was all just to set up Jean getting stuck in a lake though.
Right.
Yeah.
Even if it's just too much for the teenage Bobby to, you know, then make the first, you know, 50 yards of the wall of water ice.
Yeah.
So we can lift off the jet and get out of here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, working in tandem as a, I don't know, team of superheroes, I feel like they probably could have gotten out of that they with nobody dying.
They left it all up to her. Yeah. And then she died.
Yeah. 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 Or, I mean, Cyclops could, just tear up the ground to create like a new dam or like reroute the water. There's a million things they could have done together.
Yeah. The professor could have put every piece of concrete back in place.
Yeah.
The professor doesn't really have the telekinetic powers that Jean does.
Yeah. He's just a telepath, right?
He's more, He's more telepathic. He's
well, he can freeze everybody whenever
to the X-Men movies.
Right. Yeah. Well, he's freezing their brains. It's brain freeze.
Yeah. he's telepathic ice cream.
Yeah.
All right. So the dam bursts, kills Stryker. Jean Grey exits the jet, holds off the water, and lifts the jet up, allowing them to escape before she succumbs to the flood. Cyclops is sad, and there's a moment when I was almost certain he was going to kiss Patrick Stewart.
yeah, I don't buy that. I'm sorry. Well, never mind. I'll point it out in going on movies. How about that he's not telekinetic?
Yeah. Well, no. He clearly has telekinetic powers in the movies.
Really? I don't know. I'm with Al on this one, actually. I'm like, I don't know. We'll see.
We got a lot of these things to get through.
There's a lot of them to go.
We'll see. So then they fly away. Later, the president is giving an address to the country when Professor X and the crew show up, freeze everybody's brain, and reveal what Stryker was up to and tell the president to start being nice to mutants. The Storm was unnecessarily dramatic with that whole thing. Like, that wasn't part of the freezing process. She just wanted to, like, set the mood. Back at school, Charles, Scott, and Logan mourn Jean Grey. Then we get her giving the same voiceover as Charles did at the beginning and get a glimpse of a brief, phoenix-shaped glimpse of something under the water of Alkali Lake. Roll credits.
Yep.
I thought the Wolverine and Scott Summers weeping together over Jean Grey was an interesting thing to do in a movie.
Yeah, having them cry it out on the Blackbird.
Yeah. I was like, this is really fucking interesting. Like, as an adult, as a kid, it didn't make any sense because I was a teenager. But now I'm like, oh, fuck.
And then the last spoken words between Logan and Scott, when he reveals that she chose Scott over him, it's like, just to let you know.
I mean, we made out a little, but then she chose you.
That was Misty.
No, he made out with Jean Grey.
In the first one?
No, in this one.
Yeah, back when they were camping. She seemed to be struggling against the making out. He went in like full Wolverine on that kiss.
She's coming out of the plane. They make out. Mystique sees them, and then Mystique goes to his tent and pretends to be her.
Yeah.
After she sees them making out. It's not without its flaws, but it was overall good. I don't know.
I really enjoyed this movie.
I have the same opinion that I had when I first saw it.
Yeah, they're really getting the superhero movie down at this point. Like they know what to do with these characters now.
I feel like this was a stronger movie than the first one.
Oh, absolutely. First one was an hour and a half of meeting people.
That's all.
Yeah. This was like the Empire Strikes Back of the X-Men universe.
And you know what? That's in fact what they
keep happening.
That's what they said they were shooting for, was to make the Empire Strikes Back of the X-Men trilogy.
Well, I mean, you lose Jean Grey like you lose Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody goes back to get her in the beginning of the next movie. Yeah, it's holy shit.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to come up again in Spider-Man 2. I actually liked Age of Ultron.
I liked Age of Ultron.
Big fan of that movie.
So yeah, there'll be opportunities to talk about how the sequel is better for sure.
Oh, absolutely. So that actually brings us to the ranking. So I think we all are agreeing this was a better film than the first one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the first one is at number 3 on our list, which means
let's replace it. Just
put it straight at number 3.
Well, what's number 2?
Number 2 is Spider-Man, and number 1 is Batman.
I think we should just replace it.
Yeah, I mean, from a we keep having to remind ourselves, but from a comic book movie fan point of view, it's better than say Superman.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, so I think 3rd is good.
3rd? Yeah. Al, any thoughts?
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Hey, we'll do it. Put an X2 at number three, taking the place of its predecessor. And there we go. Which means next week we will be watching Hulk. Ang Lee's 2003 Hulk. I'm just looking at Brian's expression.
A.K.A. Dads Are a Head Trip.
Right. We get some Nolte, don't we?
Yeah, Nick Nolte and his poodles.
And Thunderbolt. So, yeah, both of their parents, him and Benny. Yeah, his poodles. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Find the woman. Those dogs knew exactly who he was talking about.
Oh, this movie is so bad. I love it.
Yeah. I haven't seen it since 2003, so this is going to be interesting.
All right.
Yeah, so that's next week, guys. Thanks for listening, everybody. For Harmless Phosphorescence, this has been Thoreau Smiley, and I also pretend to be a little girl for Patrick Stewart.
My name is Josh Cece. I have the ability to forget things.
I'm Brian Lesh. And I'm going to go try being a mutant.
Got a problem that needs solving? I'll just scratch it with my claws. I'm Alaric Weber.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Harmless Phosphorescence was brought to you by executive producers Atticus Burkett and Michael Beckwith, and producers Alyssa Dent, Hedda Paulson, and JoJo Birchtree. Harmless Phosphorescence is a production of the Harmless Entertainment Network.